Friday morning on Scoops with DannyMac.com. As always, it is presented by Henderson and Watercutty, full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois State. That's federal, municipal courts. It doesn't matter. No matter how big, no matter how small the offense, just head to their website, Henderson and Watercutty, their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. They're available 24/7 at 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400. They reached out to me, I guess it's been now well over a year ago, and said, hey, we'd like to join the Scoops family, and we hooked them up with Ben Fredrickson, and they have been the exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays. So with that, we say good morning to Ben Fredrickson at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, stltoday.com. Ben, good morning to you.
Good morning, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. You have been busy concerning MLS. We're going to jump right into that. Your latest piece in the Post-Dispatch a couple of days ago, really diving in and dissecting what's happening with the stadium for MLS. What can you tell us?
Dan, I think the main thing is that the ownership group really is following through on their pledge to make this a not just a soccer stadium, but what they feel like is part of a living, breathing downtown and a reason to, you know, to have people come to downtown West, even when there is not one of the 17 regular season soccer games. And you see that effort throughout the project. Now that we have the final details, the practice fields are there. The training facility is there. The team headquarters, everything that this stadium does, everything the soccer team does, it will be based in this downtown West region. And the other thing I think they tried to do is really answer all the questions that could be asked of the group entering the kind of the fine details of the stadium. They realized there were questions about a lease. So they said, okay, let's take that off the table. We will own the land. We will own the stadium. We will not ask the public for upkeep of the stadium. We will not ask them for renovations. We'll not ask them for demolition if that day ever comes. We're not going to put up a big, ugly parking garage and, you know, add to the parking problem downtown. We'll put limited parking beneath the practice field and utilize everything else that's there. I think they really took into consideration some of the concerns that were raised and tried to give people a, you know, an outward-facing, dual-purpose facility that can be used for a lot of different things and answered some of the biggest questions that were natural to ask in a city that had, you know, been on the wrong side of a bad lease with the football team. So I think it kind of proves their mission of, hey, this is about more than soccer. Look, a soccer team, a soccer stadium is not going to fix all of St. Louis's problems, but I do think we need more reasons to have people downtown, and I think this gives people a lot of reasons.
What are your concerns about what you saw with the renderings and with this plan?
Well, the only really potential concern would be just getting everything done in time. They hope to break ground in December. It certainly sounds like things are moving in a positive direction with MoDOT to get the land. As long as there are no kind of roadblocks, it seems like this should move pretty quickly. Any construction project this big can face delays. They have it backdated out long enough where they feel like if they get started in December, they said no problem hosting that first game in 2022. But any sort of setbacks could kind of crunch that timeline pretty fast.
Well, you know, some worried about the property tax, and that is really the hot topic for many, many people. But the ownership group will pay for 25 years, pay what the property tax is on the land acquired for the project as assessed at the time that it was acquired. So I know that's kind of a lot of mumbo jumbo, and you wrote about it in your article, but try right. to explain that to the average listener, average fan.
Yeah, and this is, I think, a great, in my opinion, a good compromise, a great compromise. There were people who said, look, you know, we've got to stop doing this with not just sports teams, but with businesses, with companies, et cetera, where they come in and they build and they never pay property tax on that land. I get that argument. This was a little bit more of a unique situation because a lot of the land, the majority of the land that's being used for this project was not paying property tax. People say, well, why is that? Well, because it was owned by the Missouri Department of Transportation. So it was generating no property tax when it was owned by the state. So that's something to keep in mind. This proposal, and it should go through, will be for the city to buy that land, or for the city to get that land from the state, and then the ownership group will buy that land from the city. So it will, the ownership group will own it. Now, their property tax for 25 years, that's the agreement, will be what the assessment of the property tax is on the undeveloped land. So they're not going to get taxed on what the stadium is. They're going to get taxed on that land as they receive it from the city, which receives it from the state. And to me, if you're going to pick at that, okay, I guess. But, you know, you got to remember the fact that right now, most of that land is generating no income via property tax. So paying some is certainly better than paying none. And having a stadium that's going to draw people for soccer, for e-competitions, for private venues, for concerts, to me is a pretty good deal. And you're getting property tax on it, which you weren't getting before.
I was looking at some of the other stadium deals, whether it be with MLS or baseball, football, basketball. I can't find one, Ben, and I'm not trying to be just some, you know, honk for the ownership group, because I'm not. I can't find one that is this good. I mean, this is about as good as it gets. They've made this about as attractive for a city to have a new team, new income, new people coming downtown, and a new spirit of the city being revived partially by this. I just can't find many better options that would have been out there than what they're proposing.
I think it's pretty unique in terms of just the way stadiums are handled in general these days. It seems like now there's such a public ask always, and some leagues will just refuse to go to a place that's primarily privately funded. You know, there are exceptions, but usually there's some sort of a pretty significant public ask. And one thing that was important to the ownership group was to not have, you know, money being diverted away from important city projects or, you know, things of that nature to soccer. So the breaks they're asking for are on things that are related to people coming to the games, which that's a pretty, you know, pretty fair deal. Those have not really changed from the financing package that was overwhelmingly approved of by the Board of Aldermen. And I think the fact that they are owning the land, they're owning the city, and they're taking the public off the hook for whatever comes in the future. They're not a tenant of the city, and the city doesn't have to be a landlord that's spreading over what happens or future negotiations. The ownership group saying, hey, we get it. We want to own it. This is our thing, and we're a neighbor, and you're a neighbor, and you're also invited to everything that we're going to do here. So, yeah, I think it is pretty rare. And I've even seen some feedback from some, you know, media outlets or specific stadium experts that are usually pretty anti anything, any public help for sports whatsoever. And even they are saying, look, this is a pretty good deal. This is something that is rare, and hopefully it will be something that other cities kind of point to and say, hey, you know, we should model it after that. And it's important to remember too, Dan, well, this is kind of the first Taylor family expedition into sports ownership. This is the same family that, you know, helped renovate the Arch grounds, that gives money to Forest Park, the Botanical Gardens, every, you know, the symphony, the orchestras. I mean, everything that they do, this matches up with that. And if there's any question as to whether they were going to handle, you know, this soccer project in a different fashion, here's evidence that says they're going to use that same way. Now, they want to win. They want to make money. They want this to be profitable. But they also, I think, very much value the idea that this, they think, they hope, is going to be, you know, a good thing for the city that kind of helps connect the downtown and gets people down there. I mean, you can see on the renderings how this feeds into each other from, you know, you go from the Arch to Bush to Enterprise to the updated Union Station to the soccer stadium. And then it's not too far to Chaffetz and not too far to, you know, Central West End and Forest Park. And you can kind of see that flow of what would keep folks, whether they're from St. Louis, not from St. Louis and visiting, or whether they're in St. Louis, would keep them around the area and kind of enjoying what the city has to offer.
You had the chance to visit with the ownership group. How excited are they about what now is basically the final step to get this thing truly rolling?
Well, they're playing in a little coy now. They're not quite ready to come out and gush about it yet. And part of that is because of, you know, the X's that have to be crossed and the T's crossed and the I's dotted and all that stuff with the Department of Transportation. So it does sound like, based off of news this week, that is moving in the right direction. But I just, the sense that I get around the group is that there's just this really, you know, high level excitement. And I do know that they have been to New York for the to the official league offices to start their official onboarding, kind of like their, hey, this is everything you need to do to have a team, and to kind of get a checklist as to the order that that's going to go down. So it's getting close, and it's getting to the point where we're going to, I think, have to start seeing some of these things like names and colors, and more importantly, front office, like who's going to build the roster of this team, who's going to coach it. Those things are all going to start kind of ramping up here as we get closer to 2022. It sounds like it's far away, but it's really not.
How excited are you? I mean, you're a sports guy, and you have to go in with the unbiased opinion of being someone that's covering this to report the news, give an opinion, but also report the news and what you did this last week. How excited are you as a sports fan in this town and seeing a revitalization of certain aspects of it just to see this now, you know, come to fruition?
Yeah, well, for the city and for the soccer fans in the city, I'm pumped, man. It's in the renderings, it's awesome. I mean, I don't know how you couldn't get excited about it. And seeing that photo, that rendering of the goalie and what it will look like from the field, that was a pretty cool image. I'll be honest, I'm gonna have to get, you know, caught up to speed and have to really dive in on covering soccer. I haven't done that much. I didn't play it, and I followed it loosely, but certainly not like I should to write about it in terms of when the games begin. So I think I'm not the only one in that place, but we do have a lot of, I know, media guys in town who are, you know, ratcheted in on soccer. I'm not one of them. So I've got some homework of my own that I need to do to get up to speed. And I've really been focused on kind of the X's and O's of getting a team. But as this gets closer, then it's going to be learning about, hey, let's figure out how this team is going to be built, you know, through expansion and what players could be available. And I think it's going to be interesting really to see what kind of approach the ownership group takes, because there's kind of two schools of thought in this league. You can either get like an older, more established, well-known player who maybe isn't as good, but will have that name value and kind of wow factor to try to get people to show up. Or you can kind of use that opportunity to go get younger, lesser known players that could be better, and hope that the fans come to see a team that's, you know, more intent on trying to go out and win than it is on just trying to have a name. So how they balance that and what route they decide to go, I think it's going to be really fascinating.
What have you heard about starting to set up a front office, a president of business, a GM, those kind of things? What are you hearing about that?
Well, the only thing I've really been able to glean is what who might not be a part of it. And I think you and I talked in the past about, you know, just kind of this assumption that Dan Flynn was going to be in the front office in some way, shape, or form. I think that has cooled a little bit. And, you know, there was the timing could have worked where he was stepping away from U.S. soccer. He's got St. Louis ties and certainly knows a lot about the game. And now the kind of buzz seems to be that he, you know, might not be affiliated as much as folks thought. Now, he wasn't kind of that unofficial advisory role. He was never given a formal title, but talking to Jim Cavanaugh at some point in time, it kind of seemed like a matter of time until he decided to, you know, they decided to make it official. Now I'm wondering if it might be moving in a different direction, but as far as who else it could be or who it might be, I don't know yet.
I am proud to add to the website as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients. And this is why you can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. the website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. STLCriminalDefense.com. Check it out. That's STLCriminalDefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements. Let's switch gears. The Blues lose Vladimir Tarasenko. What happens with this club the next 5 months?
Well, they're going to be challenged. And as much as it would be great to sit here and say, hey, you know, this could make them better, or they could, you know, no, they've lost an elite goal scorer. One of the guys who's on that top, if he's not on that 1A level of elite goal scorers, he's 1B, and there's not too much of a degree of difference between him and the absolute best. He's going to be out the rest of the season, regular season. Maybe he's back for the playoffs. They say they reevaluate in 5 months, and you hope that everything goes according to plan to maybe have him back if you can get in. But you don't really replace Vladimir Tarasenko, Dan. You have to have everybody do a little bit more. And I think if there's a silver lining here, it's that, A, it's going to create some opportunity for some of these young guys like Clem Costin and others who were kind of held up and didn't have a chance to make this roster out of camp. We talked about there needing to be basically something that created an opportunity. Well, this is a pretty big opportunity, and it sounds like Doug Armstrong's plan is to try to see if they can, you know, fill the hole from within, and then they'll start kind of reaching out and trying more on the prospect side. And then, you know, depending on how Vladdy recovers, maybe there's a way to do something, you know, around the trade deadline if this team needs an infusion. The interesting thing is there is they get some salary cap relief because he's on long-term, you know, it's a long-term injury, but that also dries up pretty quick the moment that he returns. So how do they handle that? How do they decide to do it? I don't know that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to tell Tarasenko, because he's dealt with the shoulder multiple times, say, hey, you're going to be shut down the rest of the season, playoffs included. We'll see. If I don't think they want to make that decision just yet, but how do they recover from it? Every guy has to be a little bit better. Their defense is just, the strength of their team has to be on point, and they have to spread that 30 goal scoring around. One guy, I don't think, unless there's a surprise we don't see coming, is going to do it, but everybody's going to have to play a little bit better. It's good for them that they've got Shin scoring, because he was so off in the regular season last year and fired up during the postseason. It's really good for them that they've got David Perron scoring, because he's been a kind of an offensive weapon for them to start this season. I think they need to get Ryan O'Reilly going. They need to get some more offense across the board, because they're missing an elite scorer.
Well, Mizzou football is off this weekend. Normally we preview that game, and then they've got Georgia coming up. How about Barry Odom? I mean, 3 weeks ago, they're top 25. Now you're wondering maybe about his job. Is he on the hot seat right now, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think he's on the hot seat right now as much as some of the fans will scream and shout, simply because Jim Stirk has said once again this week just what he said at this time last week when we were having similar conversations, is he's not going to make a call until the season's over. Now, if the season's over and this is the same vibe around this football team, then I think Barry Odom's job very well could be in jeopardy. I think that Jim Stirk has talked a lot about wanting to have a top 25 football team. And in year four of your head coach's season of a coach that he didn't hire, if you can't get that done, then it's fair to ask, when's it going to get done? Especially when you factor in the talent on this team, what they had in Kelly Bryant. And also, let's be honest, this was probably the softest schedule an SEC team could ever ask for this season. So, we shouldn't distort the reality, but we also need to acknowledge that Jim Stirk is not the kind of athletic director who's going to fire a coach in the middle of the season. And he's also going to want to see how this plays out. I can tell you that there's no way he liked watching these past 2 weeks where Missouri looked disinterested at times, like they didn't want to be there. And then when they did want to be there, it was oftentimes showing up after the whistle or late or hitting a guy out of bounds. There was some uncharacteristic, disturbing, you know, moments in these games. And if that's the way this trends, then he's going to have not a very good home crowd for that Florida game after the Georgia game. And he's going to have a hard decision to make. But until then, he's going to, you know, back his coach and let this play out. I think the frustration, and I get it, is on a few levels. One is Missouri does not respond well to things that are unexpected. They get beat by backup quarterbacks. They get beat by receiver moonlighting as a quarterback. They get beat when it rains. They get beat when, you know, when things go unexpectedly. Good teams find ways to adapt in the moment. They find ways to fire up when they don't have their best energy. They find ways to not let a receiver who only wants to run against them all game. The offense has kind of gone into a bit of a hole, and Derek Dooley has to figure out how to get it out. And for 2 weeks now, he hasn't been able to do it. Kelly Bryant is kind of looking like he's at times shutting down. I wonder what's going through his head. He hasn't lost hardly at all in his college career, and now he's on a team that's trending in a bad direction. I think this bye week came at a good time, but I don't know that 3 bye weeks is going to help you get ready to go play a game at Georgia if your head's not screwed on straight. So they've got some soul searching to do. Certainly, you know, this, I picked Missouri to go 9-3 this year, and I felt like I was kind of underselling them a little bit. That means they can't lose another game, and they've got to play Georgia and Florida in back-to-back weeks after this bye week. Tennessee's getting better, and Arkansas is pretty bad. That's probably the one guaranteed win left on their schedule. But if they play like they did against Vanderbilt and Kentucky, they could lose all of them. And I think that's where the fan base is, and I get it. But, you know, you got to understand this athletic director is going to see what this team can finish up. And also remember, too, that right now, you know, this could still be a season that's banned from a bowl game. So if it ends up being a dud and Missouri's banned, then it's fair to say, well, they wouldn't have been playing in a bowl game anyway. So I can't see inside Jim Sterk's head. I just know that he wants to see Missouri finish strong. And if they don't, then I think he's going to have a tough call on his hands, because, you know, you can't sell a fan base on a top 25 team when every time a coach has gotten there within his 4 seasons, they've lost the next game.
Kelly Bryant, I'm not sure how I'd classify his season, and it's still unfolding with the games that you mentioned that are left, but how would you classify the year that he's had?
Well, it's been disappointing, and I, in some ways, feel guilty for some of that. Not that I was the only one hyping Kelly Bryant up, but I think we all were certainly fired up about what he might be able to do, and maybe it was a little too lofty of expectations for him. I think in the Wyoming game, you saw him play like a guy who could lift up a team and lead it, and he didn't get the response he wanted. But we haven't seen that guy, the guy on the sideline who's rallying the troops, you know, in a game they're losing. We haven't seen that guy since then. And I don't know if it's because he feels like he can't do it or if he's frustrated. You know, the other thing, too, is we don't know really, and probably won't ever know, how hurt he is right now. He got his knee twisted pretty bad in the Troy game. He came back impressively, and now he's got a hamstring strain that he had in the game against Kentucky. So he's beat up, and he's also, Dan, not getting very good blocking from his offensive line, which is really, that's kind of crushing for a quarterback when you feel like you're always, you know, having someone breathing down your neck. This offensive line returned a bunch of guys, and it's been bad. It's been really bad the past 2 weeks, and that affects everything. It means they can't run the ball as well. It means Kelly Bryant is worried about getting crushed every time he drops back to pass. And he's not able to find, you know, the Albert O's and some of the other receivers. So it starts for me at the offensive line, but Kelly Bryant got so much attention and such high expectations. It was somewhere probably unfair, but I do think we expected him to play better than he has here recently.
Let's throw some quick hitters at you as we wrap it up. The baseball season is over. I'll start with the Cardinals. How active do you expect them to be this offseason?
Well, I think it will be an active offseason, maybe not necessarily as much as go replace a bunch of new players, but they've got some decisions now to make that they, I think, have been avoiding for a while that now they're going to come to a head. They've got to start prioritizing some of this glutton of young outfielders they have. We're going to have to learn soon who they view as legitimate players for this outfield next season. And then I think they're going to have to face a harsh reality with some veteran players that they owe a lot of money to. They're going to have to decide, you know, what to do with Matt Carpenter and Dexter Fowler. And we're probably going to learn what they're deciding as they go about making their moves. I think there's a case to add a starting pitcher. I would like to see them go after some sort of left-handed option for the rotation, because Austin Gomber, while he might be that guy, is going to be a bit of a question mark, you know, coming off of the injury. But to me, everything that's in play is the entire outfield, because I don't expect Marcell Ozuna to be back unless he surprises us by accepting a qualifying offer. And then I think they have to look at third base. So whether it's Mike Moustakas and you ask Matt Carpenter to come off the bench and play maybe some corner outfield, whether it's trying to get a replacement for Ozuna, we really can't look at options until we kind of get a feel for who they're banking on and who they're going to scale back a little bit or even try to move. So until they give us a sense of the plan as to what guys they feel like are locked in and what they're looking to do, then you basically have to say, well, they could do anything to try to stabilize the offense, and it includes the entire outfield and third base. I think those are probably all your positions that are not locked in. I would imagine everybody else for the most part is back, and then you update the pitching as you always do. I think the other thing I would bet on would be them not going after any sort of 30 plus expensive relievers. I think that ship has sailed, Dan. I think the Cardinals have gotten to the point where they feel like they can create them, they can find them and rehab them. They can come up with guys and much better than they've had success signing guys, because those signings have come back to bite them in a variety of different ways now. And I think they're probably getting close to being done with it.
Some of the rules that are on the cusp of being implemented in Major League Baseball are coming in 2020. One of the interesting ones that may or may not be there, electronic strike zone. Where are you with that?
Yeah, and people give me a hard time because, as you know, and you and I fight about this regularly, I'm pro DH. So when you're pro DH, people just think like you're just for everything. Like guys should have to ride the bullpen carts, and you wish the automatic strike zone was there yesterday. I'm more of a middle of the road pro DH candidate. I don't love this idea of the automatic strike zones, and I was actually getting a chuckle out of seeing Jack Flaherty sticking up for umpires on Twitter during the World Series. And here's my thing is, if you read into some of the research, some of the results of what the automatic strike zones have been doing when they've tested them out in some of these minor leagues, they're kind of changing the strike zone. Like, for example, you're seeing curveballs that cross the plate at the front of the plate and dive out at the bottom where hitters are. Those are always called balls by a human ump. Now they're strikes. So just, you know, there are some changes that are going to be happening because of that. And my thing too is everyone makes the mistake of assuming that technology will be perfect, but it won't be. There'll be malfunctions. There'll be, you know, teams running around with tinfoil on their heads, assuming that one strike zone at a home ballpark is different than theirs. I mean, this is going to could potentially open up a Pandora's box. Maybe it's inevitable, maybe it's coming, and I don't know that I'm fully against it, but they better make sure they have all the kinks worked out before they go and start replacing these umpires who are pretty good at what they do. Now, there are some bad umps out there, and the guys who make it about them and want to be the star of the show and you know, get rid of those guys. I'm totally with it on that, but there are a lot of good umpires who call a pretty consistent strike zone. I'm not sure the players are as pro electronic strike zone as a lot of the media members are.
I am proud to add to the website as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again, and really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer. is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements. Expanded rosters and then a cut down of rosters in September. You're good with that?
Yes, I am. These games are, they've got to find ways to keep these games from being, you know, so long. And, you know, in this day and age, our attention spans are that of a caffeinated gnat. And you can't ask the average American to sit through a game that's long. And I get it. Baseball's long. It doesn't bother me. But when you're talking about ways to make your sport more approachable, then you've got to do what you can reasonably to keep these games moving along. And not being able to let a manager cycle through 100 pitchers is a good way to do that.
Final point I want to bring up, and we could probably do 2 hours on this, but just generally speaking, your thoughts on college athletes being paid for their likeness and their image. I think it's a long time coming. I've got personal views on this as to why college athletes should be paid, but the business has grown to the point that these guys got to get a piece of it, and for them not to see some type of compensation for it, I think is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm with you, and it's overdue, and let's be careful before we just pat the NCAA on the back and say, hey, good job, because they are notorious for this, where they say, hey, we're going to do this, and then it's, you know, the time comes, and it's, well, you know, they know how to say the right thing. They're not so good about doing the right thing, but hopefully the pressure of these states taking it out of their hands has expedited this process. And here's why I'm a fan of name, image, and likeness. I think it's the perfect way to work around the really sticky situation of paying college athletes. And I'm not against them getting paid from the school, you know, a paycheck, but it does create a lot of potential problems. And here's what I mean by that. How do you figure out what to pay the star softball starting pitcher compared to the starting quarterback? And there's a lot that goes into that. Those sports those sports create different amounts of income for the school. Those jobs are different value jobs, and you can see how that's a pretty slippery slope there. What this does is it takes that out of the table. The schools don't have to try to have anything to do with this. They simply say, hey, if you can create some money off your name, image, and likeness, go for it. Now, if the schools are going to put out video games and jersey sales with those people's numbers on them, they should get a cut of it. That's just common sense. But this also allows, you know, Kelly Bryant to go get a deal with Harpo's where he wants to appear on their billboard. He can get a cut. The school doesn't have anything to do with that. It doesn't have to deal with what about if the star receiver wants that. Well, if he wants that, then go get it. I mean, it really, it's no different. And I try to put it this way because it kind of, I think, makes people actually think about it as opposed to getting mad about athletes getting paid. It's no different than a kid that's on a music scholarship to a performing arts school, picking up a job at a concert venue and playing a set after one of his classes on a weeknight and getting paid. No one gets mad about that. No one gets mad if that kid picks up a sponsorship by a guitar company because he's that good. Nobody cares. So this is no different. If you are appealable, if you're appealing to companies that want to sponsor you, you're allowed to go down that road, and the schools don't have to get involved with it. Now, again, it's going to have to be policed, and you're going to have to make sure that, you know, you're kind of trying to fend off rogue boosterism and things like that. But really, by opening up the door, by allowing it, you're going to cut out a lot of the seedy middlemen by simply making it okay. Because right now, people are getting paid anyway, and it's done behind closed doors and kind of under the radar. And it oftentimes, unfortunately, leads to, of all people, getting screwed over is the kids, you know, because people are making deals for them and shoe companies are leveraging them and coaches and handlers. And oftentimes it's the kids that are getting cut out. So this actually puts the kids at the forefront. And I think the people who are mad about it are the people who are worried about big college sports losing, you know, any inch of money that they have coming in, and they're grabbing it hand over fist.
Always great stuff, Ben. Thanks so much. We'll catch up again next Friday.
Sounds good, buddy. Talk soon.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.